Welcome to the Life in Deep Ellum podcast, exploring the sacred in art, faith, and community.
We're here. We're all here. We made it. I'm rolling in pretty exhausted. This week was really, really exhausting for me. I am very weary inwardly, and so therefore I'm pretty weary outwardly too, like in my body. But I'm already, the reality that the 1 year anniversary of my dad being gone, of my dad dying, is coming up August 29th, and I'm already like in the throes of processing that, right? So this week was tough. This week was hard. So we take our breaths. But I actually think it's really important for each of you as well to think about where you're at right now. Like, you came in, we're all here, we all got dressed and decided this is the place we would be, and you sat, you know? But who are you right now? Like, just take a second, okay? I actually want us to do this. So if you take notes on your phone, if you have paper, if you don't have paper and pen, our ushers can give you paper and pen. If you like to like actually take notes of things or write this down and put it in your pocket, if that's more, you know, your style, just raise your hand. They'll give you a pen, paper, or either of the one. But I want you to, if not, take your phone out. I want you to think about yourself. Like, whether that means you're closing your eyes or whether it means you're just sitting there, think about you right now in this spot, okay? Kids too. This isn't just an adult thing. Maybe it's weary, excited, childless, because my kids are with my mom. You know, what is it for you? What comes up to you? Like, write it down. I want you to write it down. If you see words coming up in your head while you think about it, do that. Maybe it's bored, uninterested, waiting till this is over. Whatever version of you that has walked in, I want us to just write it down. It's important for each of us to take time as we walk into this room to think through that every time you walk in. Because we're talking about being in the season of healing for this community. It's you. So, like, man, LaShonda, so appropriate that you were up here talking about that, because it's you. You is this community. So think about it. Like, who are you right now, right? You're walking in with all of you as you're becoming yourself today and waking even fully more up. Throughout this series, we've been asking questions to guide every week. We started with, am I open? We had, am I hopeful? Am I connected? Am I invited? Am I safe? And this week is, am I equipped? Next week's question is, am I capable? And then the week after that, we're going to close out this whole series with what we're calling a healing service, which, depending on your background, saying the words healing and service is like, I'm sorry, what are we doing? I will not be there doing whatever came up in my mind that sounds insane. Okay, I realize those two words could bring up a number of things, or maybe absolutely nothing. Like, what? What could that be, right? But, you know, for just like language sake, those are those two words, healing, service. For us, we want it to really be just an intentional time where each of us can consider what our invitation is from God, from divine, for this time in our lives, for healing, and how we're going to respond to it, which takes some time to sit in a service and think about. I went to, in my 6 week sabbatical, I did a counseling session, and in that counseling session, it was great. By the end of it, my homework leaving the session was to continue doing what I had been engaged with. I had I had felt the kind of nudge to engage healing in my own life just as a person, and I had responded in a specific way. And at the end of the session, my advice and my homework was keep doing that. So maybe that'll be you. Maybe you'll come to that service, that time period, that block of time we all get in the same room, and maybe you walk away and be like, oh, I just keep doing what I'm doing. Like, okay. And maybe it's not. There's no right or wrong, right? There's no right or wrong response. There's just response to healing. So I hope to see you there. That's in 2 weeks from now. I hope to see you there because it's important. If we're talking about this, it's important for us to engage. It's important for you to engage and for me. But today's question is, am I equipped? Am I equipped? And I just want to like start it by saying there may be some huge, I don't want to call them temptations, but like, you know, maybe temptations to like think about how equipment as like a do thing. This is what I do. Like the church equips me and then I do things with that because equipment is physical. And so this thing is about doing. I want us to try our hardest to just make that thought just like kind of die to the background throughout this whole time together, because this time and this question isn't about that. We're not making a to-do list and Jesus hasn't given us one. We're making a to-be list. And he's given us that, right? And it's for everyone in the room. So equip, like I mentioned, it is a question of taking inventory in your life. It's a question of taking inventory about what you got. What do you possess? What kind of tools you have? Could also be a question of how you're oriented to what you got. Well, I have this hammer and wood and nail, but I'm oriented to the couch and I'm not going to engage my tools and build something our family needs, right? So it could be a question of how you're oriented to the equipment, right? Or just what it is. It could be either or. The definition is equip is to supply, it's a verb, to supply with necessary items for a particular purpose as furniture in an apartment. It implies that one is prepared with proper equipment. So when we read the story today, we're going to look to see what kind of equipment comes up in the story. Is Jesus urging anyone to be equipped with anything? Simple as that. We good? All right, so if you have a Bible, open it up. If you don't, the ushers can get you one if you raise your hand. We're turning to the book of Mark because we're in the book of Mark throughout this whole time, this whole series, and we're in chapter 14. We're looking at two stories today, but this is the main one. Chapter 14, verse 32. If you have it on your phone, get it. Okay, we're not going to put it on the screen because we just don't do that here. All right, Mark 14, verse 32. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father, everything's possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." And once more he went away and prayed the same thing. And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough! The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." And just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them, saying, "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard." Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Rabbi," and kissed him. The men seized Jesus and arrested him. Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting his ear off. Jesus said, "Am I leading a rebellion that you've come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I was with you, teaching in the temple courts, and you didn't arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled." And then everyone deserted him and fled. All right. So where we are is Gethsemane, the Garden of Gethsemane is in the Mount of Olives. This is an olive grove with a mill for pressing olives. It's apparently a common place Jesus and his friends went because Judas was like, "I know where he'll be." You know, like, this is just normal for them to be in this area. When is this story? It's after the Passover meal where Jesus was sitting with his friends and telling him how he would be arrested and how they would betray him and all these things. And they were just like, "No, it's never going to happen." And there was a lot of angst in that room, right? So this is right after that, okay, which may have been held in Mark's home, who's writing this book. But it's right before his arrest, his betrayal. So this portion we just read takes place at this in-between period of time, right? Something has just ended. The next thing has not yet begun. This is a period of waiting. Sounds like, you know, us. We almost immediately notice that Jesus is going to spend this period of waiting in prayer, in wrestling prayer, and keeping watch. And we almost immediately notice that Jesus is somehow equipped as he faces his own dang arrest and his imminent death. Somehow he's equipped with this practice of prayer and watchfulness, with the sorrow he bears, and the disciples are not, right? The disciples are carrying sorrow. When it says that their eyes were heavy, that means, in the words that are used there, that they were tired from exhaustion. They were exhausted from sorrow, sorry. They were exhausted from sorrow, right? So they're there too. They just don't seem equipped with this practice. They're not doing it. Right? They're falling asleep, which is so tough because I know sorrow and I know y'all know sorrow, and it's just so tough to think, "I'm sorry, Jesus, that they were just trying to rest." Like, God. But what was going on here, guys? Okay, so here we go. He told them a couple of things, and the big things they weren't doing was staying watchful and praying, right? The big things they weren't doing is how we talk about it. They weren't praying. They weren't being watchful. So let's just take the first one that we think is a do, okay? Prayer. And there's so many, how many sermons you think are even preached on prayer? Like, we talking in the 100 zillion range? We talking in the 10 zillion range? Like, it, whatever it is, it's just so many. It's so many. Because prayer is this thing. I mean, Jesus talks about it a lot, right? And it's this word that emphasizes, like, engagement, dialogue, right, between human and divine, human and God, right? You can do it together. You can do it alone. Some do it in tongues or other languages, and some are like, "What is that?" There's just, prayer is a big deal, right? If you're gonna engage God, it seems like a big deal. For me, prayer started. It starts feeling very bizarre when I start thinking about it too hard, right? When you start thinking about it just at all, actually. But it starts to feel a little less crazy for me, a little less bizarre when I start seeing people do it who are, like, not attached to any faith. And then I'm like, "Oh, okay. I'm like, I guess we just do this. I guess humans just do this thing just anyway." Like, whether there's people, I have friends who might worship beauty or might worship nature or whatever have you. You see people praying to copy machines. It's just like, you see people praying to things that are either inanimate in our eyes, in our physical world, or just not there and believed in, right? I mean, the copy machine thing is, It's funny to witness, but it's legit, y'all, because, you know, you see people like, listen, just do it. Like, okay, I'm here. I'm willing. If you have all you need, what do you need? Do you need more ink? Like, I'll go, just please, you know, like, why is that the one technology that hasn't, I don't know, made it? Maybe Apple needs to get it. But anyway, we see humans, like, using prayer at some point in life, whether they're calling it that or not, right? It's talking, it's connection, it's this mysterious, like, agreement we have in our brain, in our consciousness of, like, connecting, right? And so we see here that Jesus is concerned with the disciples' ability or inability to pray. And it's not the first time that he does that. When we turn to Mark, we're going to go to Mark, let's see, where is it at? Mark 9. Mark 9, verse 14. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. So Jesus says, verse 16, what are you arguing with them about? And they say, a man in the crowd answered, teacher, I brought my son who's possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth. He gnashes the teeth. He becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive it out, but they couldn't. And Jesus says, you unbelieving generation, how long should I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So they bring Jesus to him. The spirit threw the boy into a convulsion. Verse 21, Jesus says, how long has he been like this, right? He's just talking to him. He says, from childhood. And so Jesus goes on to heal the boy, okay? Verse 22, the guy says, if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. And Jesus says, if you can, everything's possible for one who believes. And then he heals him. Verse 26, it says that his body looked like a corpse after he was healed, so they thought that he had died, but Jesus stood him up and he was well. After Jesus went inside, the disciples said to him privately, why couldn't we do that? And he says, this kind can only come out by prayer. So he's concerned with it. He's like, prayer, y'all. Prayer. I don't know how else to say this. Prayer, you know? He's concerned with it. And the Greek verb used here in verse 18 to describe the powerlessness that the disciples had against these spirits to heal this boy, it's the same word, ouk iskousas, could not. It's the same verb used to describe the disciples' powerlessness to their exhaustion in the garden. A powerlessness brought about by prayerlessness. Peter, James, and John, they're there with him. Historically, they've made these grand claims to be with him, to never leave his side, right? Peter had just done that earlier in chapter 14, his avowal to never leave Jesus. And the two guys, James and John, they did it earlier in chapter 10. They affirmed their ability to just stick by him through all he has to go through his suffering. And Jesus has these three come in further into the garden, further into the sorrow, because their glib self-confidence exposes them. It exposes them. And for that reason, he commands them to be diligent. When he says, watch and pray, he's not saying, I'm sorry you're not doing enough. He's giving them tools. He's not saying, do this amidst your weariness. He's saying, oh my God, pray, because you're not going to be able to make it. We're about to be, like, you're about to, what? I'm saving you from your suffering? No. Jesus isn't saying pray and watch so that you don't suffer. Pray and watch because I want to save you from the shame you're about to face. You're about to put yourself in shame. You're about to put yourself in disconnected places from me, from God. You're about to put yourself in these places that are so hard. So pray so that you don't. Pray so that you can stay connected, so that you can go in, so that you don't have to face the shame. Yes, you'll suffer, but you'll walk in like I can. So, of course, they don't take those steps. They don't take the two steps that could help them. Prayer is communion with God, right? It's 12, I was about to say 12 step. because I'm about to say I love the 12-step way of prayer. Now, I don't know if this is how it happens every time, but I've been witness to someone in the 12-step program praying. Maybe it was like journaling that morning. Maybe it was just being praying to God and whatever have you. Maybe it's an issue, praying about an issue, a celebration, a realization, whatever it may be, a concern, a confession. But a 12-stepper will then call two other steppers, two other people, and tell them about it. And then prayer's done. We don't do that, right? No one made that a doctrine for us. So, isn't that so great? Oh, I love that. I love that it's just like, it's here, and it's not just here. It's not even done until it's here, right? So I love that, and I bring that up because Jesus, he sees it. He sees these guys, and he loves them. And he knows that if they engage in the relationship, they'll be able to engage in the relationship here. He knows that it can do that. He knows that it'll help them, that instead of shame, they might experience suffering, but they might have authority in that space. He knows that. Because he knows that being human means that you're vulnerable and that you're exposed. God knows this. Jesus knows this. At this point, more than ever. The deity of Christ is a doctrine that's well defended in evangelical Christianity. But his humanity is a neglected one. What, is it too hard for us to really own it? What is it? Because it's because of his humanity that he can even be our Savior. You realize that. It's not because he was divine. God is God. It wasn't until he came and became human that he could even be our Savior. And it's so neglected in the way that we practice our life in Christianity, y'all. Throughout his life, as we read it in the Gospels, Jesus is human. He's human, and he knows it. That means he's vulnerable, and he's exposed, just like you and me are. His fears are exposed, and he's vulnerable to empire and to capital C church taking advantage of them. Of the time, right? He talked to Pharisees and priests. That's who he talked to. That's who he rebuked, right? It's no different today. You know it. He's human. He's vulnerable. He's exposed. It matters that that matters a lot. It matters that we don't neglect it. And it matters that we look deeper into it. Throughout his life, as we read about it, he made it a practice to model a consistent and necessary engagement with God. He coined the term Abba Father. No one referenced God like on a regular basis like that with God. No. It's not that the word wasn't used. It was fine. Adults used it. You called your dad dad. You called your father father. But he coined it with God. It's relationship. It's engagement. He says plainly that it's only through this consistent engagement and participation that he's equipped to heal. And, as we see at the resurrection, to be healed. We see him raise the bodies, and we see him free people from all these things, and then we're surprised when he embodies it at the resurrection. All of them were so surprised. Why wouldn't that have been expected? He was engaged, and he was telling them it only comes through prayer. So, how are you going to pick it up again this week, y'all? How are you going to pick it up? How are you going to pick up prayer again? Because it's not about doing something. It's about engaging your spirit, your being, your you, your Liz, your Mimo-ness. It's about engaging your Liz-ness, right? Your Kevin-ness with God. It's about a being thing. This is how you be in the world, right? So this week, how are you going to re-engage it? Are you going to engage that Trinity that we talk about, that community, Father, Son, Spirit? Are you going to engage that community this week? Maybe you go on a walk on your lunch break. Is that going to be it for you? Okay. Maybe you wake up and you sit up, and before anything else, you just... Boom, I'm engaged. I'm engaged. What is it going to be this week for you? What is it going to be this week? Find it out. Figure it out. Put it in your phone and write it down. How will you pray? We're not told exactly how. That's where we get all tripped up. Someone tell us how. We're not. You know, Jesus gives the Lord's Prayer as an example, not as a rule. And so it's tricky. It can feel tricky. Where do I start? Google it. I don't know. Sure, start there. If you don't have anywhere else to start, start there. If you have an inkling of somewhere else to start, start there. What is it for you this week? And then do it this week. Don't say the next 6 months, and don't tell me you're going to do it for the next 2 weeks, because you won't. Do it for this week. I mean, I would say just today is more realistic, but we'll expand it to this week, right? What are you going to do? How are you going to pray? Jesus offers prayer as this cure for outside powers capitalizing on the disciples' exposed fears. Jesus offers prayer, not as the do prayer, as the be prayer. He offers us access to engage divine for a cure from outside powers. How? He got arrested and he got killed. How? Because if you'll notice, his fears were exposed, but he took them into the garden. He took them into the relationship, and that's where they were dealt with. Did God capitalize on them? No. He just said it's still going to happen. He helped Jesus face them. It's not because he was God that he does these things. It's because he was human and he was engaged. He was human and he was engaged. This is the whole reason, right? So his fears were exposed, no different than those disciples with him. And he took him in. He took him in into the engaged place where he was able to try to understand God. I don't know. I don't think he got there. And he was able to challenge God too. Please take this away. Can this hour pass? I'm challenging you on it. But it's only because he took his fear there. And then God said, you know, it's still going to happen, but you're going to be able to face it. And when he came out, he said, get up, look, pray. You weren't praying, get up, because they're here. And how did he walk in? He walked in gentle. Isn't that a fruit of the Spirit? Gentle, right? With authority. How did Peter and the disciples walk in, y'all? Y'all tell me. Scared. Scared, violent, fighting with sword, right? This is not hard to see, right? But it's also not magical. He's human. He just took it there. And that's why he was telling the disciples, not to heap duty on them. We don't have time for that message, right? Because you and me need healing. Bad. What have we just been through, y'all? And not even been through. What are we going through, right? You and me were alone this past year. Some of you were really, literally alone for so long. And I hope not many of us, right? Because I hope that in this space you don't have to be. We need healing. We need that Jesus says pray because he loves us, not because he's heaping duty on us, right? In prayer, Jesus suffers. In prayer, he loudly laments. In prayer, he brings his fear. And now he offers it to us as a gateway to be equipped to participate in our collective healing as we figure out what it means for this faith community to move forward after a heck of a year. And just as he was resurrected, he offers it to you to embody your own new life. Because when we're in regular friendship with this triune community, Father, Son, and Spirit, we remember that we're part of it. We're part of that community. When we're a part of it, we remember we're a part of it. When you engage it and you find acceptance and belonging, you remember that you're a part of it. Jesus in John, I always used to hate it because it felt so confusing to me. And I thought, Jesus, why are you so confusing to the people you're talking to? Can you please say it clearer so that they're not so like, what? And I always just hated it. But it's this part in John where he's like, remain in me because I'm in you and you're in me. And I'm in the Father and the Father's in me, because when the Father's in me, that means he's in you. That means you're in him and he's in me. If he's in me and I'm in you and you're in me and you're in him. And he just goes on, and I'm always like, oh my God, that's not helpful. But at the same time, though, at the same time, you're kind of like, how else would you say it? Like, he's really trying, you know. He's like, this is you just, when you engage the community of God, Father, Son, of Father, Son, Spirit, you remember that you belong there. You remember you were invited there. And you remember that not only are you loved, but you're given many gifts for this journey. Gifts that can equip you for the healing of those around you and for your own, of your sons. Our sons need to be healed. Our daughters, our husbands and wives, our parents, our neighbors, our enemies. You're reminded that you have access to these gifts that can help you be a part of that. And of your own healing in the deep secret places of your own heart. Prayer reminds us of our belonging in the community of the Trinity, and so reminds us of the belonging of her in that space too, of him in that space, even though I'm mad at him right now, of her in that space, right? It reminds us that they belong too. Nobody fits, everyone belongs, right? It reminds us. This kind of communion, this kind of engagement, the word we say is prayer. Find another word, right? English, like, this kind of engagement equips humanity with gifts of the transformed heart, which also Christianity knows as fruits of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Thank you, Jesus, for telling the disciples that right then. They're about to face it. Really, really difficult time. So then we jump to watch. That's the other thing he was telling them. That's the other thing he was equipped with, apparently, and they weren't doing. Watch. In their physical and emotional exhaustion, the disciples find it difficult to stay awake. Watch. The word used for watch there has two implications. And in context of the story, it's been translated into English in a way that makes you think he was saying, watch, like stay awake and keep your eyes open because they'll be coming. I told you I'm going to get arrested tonight. That's fine. The same word has the implication of spiritual wakefulness. And I don't think it's a mistake that the word can be used in both ways. And I don't think Jesus made it a mistake, right? I think he said it, and I think that they knew. When Paul writes to the Ephesians about the idea that we do not fight against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and authorities and against the powers of this dark world and against the spiritual forces, right before he says that, he has all this instruction for moms and dads and kids, for masters and servants. They were in their own time, you know. But he has all this instruction. And then he says, we know we don't fight against flesh and blood. We fight against the spiritual realm, right, of darkness and powers and all that. That's what he says in Ephesians. Spiritual wakefulness feeds physical wakefulness and vice versa. When we are spiritually awake, we see all of the interactions in our lives and our relationships more truly, more accurately. When we're spiritually awake, we see all these interactions as necessary to attend to get instruction from, and all things like that, right? And when we're physically awake, well, we're just literally, our eyes are open, our bodies are here, and you came here today, and you're going to go where you're going to go next. And you can use your eyeballs to see spiritual reality all around you. The spiritual reality helps us to wake up every day. Waking up every day helps us to look around our world and see reality as spiritual and to see spiritual realities, right? So these are both things. The same word is used for both instances, right? It's beautiful. One thing I want to say is that we have to be awake to the sorrow. Maybe you're in this room and you don't readily feel the sorrow. Sorrow of this past year. Maybe you feel excited. Maybe you feel ready for what's next. Maybe you feel whatever, anticipatory. Maybe you don't readily feel that sorrow. Maybe you're full of excitement, anticipation. But whether you sense the sorrow or not, even if you've worked through it, okay? Whether you sense it or not, even if it feels like a waste of time to attend to it, we need to be awake to our sorrow and to the sorrow of those around us. Being awake to the sorrows of this world is not the responsibility only of the poor and powerless. You and I are responsible to be awake to the sorrow. If it feels like a waste of time, do it anyway. If it feels like you've worked through it, do it anyway. Thank you, LaShonda. Be awake to the sorrow. Jesus was called a man of sorrows for this reason. And when we're spiritually awake and we see reality as spiritual and the spiritual realities around us, we will be awake to that sorrow, right? If you have a sense of power and strength right now as you think about the sorrows of this past year or as you think about the sorrows in your life, that's great. It's needed in this community. It's needed for you. But it's not to blind you. It's not to blind you to the continued suffering of others and even your own suffering underneath the surface. It's there to help you face it, like Jesus was able to face his own sorrow on the cross, to see it more accurately, to walk into it with gentleness, compassion for yourself, compassion for those around you. That's what your strength is for. That's what your joy is for. You have joy? You want to be at the joy table so that you can meet your own sorrow with gentleness, right? Being awake to sorrow, it's all of our duty. Attend to it. Spiritual eyes, open physical eyes are open to see reality as spiritual. We're going to take some time as they sing this song just to invite the Spirit into your brain. Invite the Spirit into your thinking. Because you need the Spirit. You need the Spirit to watch, to pray, to do it every day. We don't have time for the duty story. We don't have time for the duty story anymore. We need healing. Tired. We need to know what will imbibe us with life to be able to access the power we need to have authority against the spirit who would capitalize on our vulnerability and expose fears. Jesus dealt with his fear and exposed vulnerability in relationship. That gave him the ability to step into his own arrest with authority. When they tried to capitalize on his fear, even on the cross, come down from there. You say you're the Son of God. Then come down from there. He wasn't budged. He dealt with his fears. He had dealt with his fears in relationship. He was able to face them. all stand up. I want you guys to maybe play a little longer even after we're done. Just if you want to sit in it, if you need to today. If you don't, if no one needs to, that's fine. But they'll just be playing a little longer. I'm just going to speak the same words I spoke to you last time. The same words that the Greek poets wrote about God, and they didn't know they were writing about him. Because it's true. Because he's God. Because he's here for every single person in here and out of this place. In him, we live, we move, we have our being. We're his offspring. That's it. Love you guys so much.